Student radio may contain coarse language and adult content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi there, you're listening to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Anthony, and I'm with the Johnsons.
Hey, I resent that.
Yeah. Oh no, look, I'm clearly the main player here and I emphasise that every week.
I resent being called a Johnson.
Johnson and Johnson.
All of that build up and it ended up falling a little flat. Are you gender confused then, Anthony, Mr. Hegarty?
I wouldn't say I'm gender confused.
Anyway, no, we're back to
we're
back to brighten up your dull little lives for another week.
I'm Casey Johnson.
I'm Timothy. I'm not a Johnson.
Neither am I. I'm Mateo. I'm not playing your little games.
And I'm Anthony.
We're back here for another week to entertain y'all, to talk about the news, to talk about the current affairs,
talk about what's been happening in this world of ours.
What's on the show tonight?
We're going to talk about Israel.
We're going to talk about Scientology.
So all the big issues there.
We're going to talk about our special mystery contributor again.
And we're going to have some frivolous fun. But after this, Big Brother is watching you.
Student radio at O Week on Radio Adelaide 101.5 FM. As studious as you are.
Local band The British Robots with Trickster from their unreleased demo. They've got a gig coming up on Friday, this Friday, the 5th of June, 9 PM at Jive, supporting Behind These Walls. Their These Days EP launch.
And they are going on a wonderful, fantabulous interstate Kevin Rudd-financed tour of, I believe it's Queensland and
kind of Melbourne, I think, and Brisbane.
With Wigger Up, another great local band. They're playing the Empress Ballroom.
It's interesting that you say Queensland and Melbourne rather than Queensland and Victoria.
Yeah, no, I said that incorrectly, but I thought it was going to pass, but Chris, you brought it up.
Can I also say, it is a bit, like, the song was Trickster, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a bit tricky to call themselves the British Robots and actually be Australian.
And not robots.
I've never seen that done before with any musical act, and frankly, I'm a bit offended.
What a scandal.
They're not robots, though.
But anyway.
Someone mentioned Big Brother.
And
Mateo,
robots.
And robots.
Yeah. Well, there's recently been a quite interesting story out of an English preparatory school. It's called Davenant Foundation School. It's in Loughton. And the students there have actually been protesting against what they consider to be Big Brother-style CCTV cameras that have recently been installed.
So hold on. Does that mean are they in the showers? And then
no, they're actually just in. They're in two of the classrooms.
I think Big Brother wasn't it like a film before it was a television show or something.
Are the kids at the schools old enough to be able to reference this? Are they just this isn't of their time? They should be referencing Hole in the Wall and stuff.
Well, they're British public school kids. They're pretty clued up. They know these things. Anyway, they just plain walked out for 3 weeks. They missed 3 weeks of their studies, and they actually refused to return until they were assured that the cameras would be switched off. When they did return, they actually wore masks as a way of continuing the protest so they wouldn't be seen, some sort of V for Vendetta masks, I'm assuming. Now, basically, it's been said by a couple of parents of the children, by some of the children themselves, that this is an invasion of their civil liberties, and that, that having to deal with all these cameras, and that really schools doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
What possible reason have they got to put the cameras in the first place?
You're joking? Why would they have a reason not to? This isn't some great... This is absolutely ridiculous, and it's a perfect example of pretentious youths.
Do you mean it's ridiculous that they're putting the cameras
or that there aren't more cameras? There should be more cameras, Tim.
Damn right there should be more cameras.
In every classroom.
I agree. Not every classroom. I think there should be cameras in every house, in every closet, in every pantry. When someone goes to get food...
In every shower.
Indeed, in every shower.
You're going to be voyeuristic.
I am going to be voyeuristic, and I just think, you know, if people are eating baked beans, the government has a right to know.
Well, preposterous characterizations aside, I do actually think this is a serious issue. Cameras, you know, I mean, obviously, this is quite a prestigious institution of education. But look, I have no problem with, especially the UK. I've got quite a bit of an attitude now of, you know,
nanny state attitude.
No, it's not a nanny state attitude. Simply having CCTV cameras as an option for, you know, providing additional evidence in criminal cases and acting as an additional disincentive to commit crime.
Tim, hold on. This is a school, right? How many people, like most of the people at this school, can't even be involved in mature age criminal cases? And I'm not. I highly doubt that most of them, you know, are likely to be going around blowing up, well, not blowing up buildings, obviously, you know,
yeah, but,
I don't know, assaulting people. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, okay,
is there a need for this in a school, Tim? I can understand the argument for it, say, on the street in the middle of London, right, where there are significant crime problems, but in a school,
yeah, but
honestly.
If the school is willing to spend the money on it, of course they can put it there.
If all it does
is deal with trivial issues like people throwing crap at the teacher when their back is turned, then that's a good thing.
Are you effectively saying might is right? If they have the money to put in the cameras,
no,
they shouldn't.
Look, I mean, I'm saying that to deal with the issue is like, shouldn't they spend their money on something else? Well, I suppose maybe you could make a case there. But,
okay.
But coming to me crying about civil liberties of children in high school.
Hold on, Tim. If the kids feel that their right to privacy is being violated, then surely the school has an interest to protect, you know, as in to.
And that they haven't. Can I just say, they haven't put these cameras in Higgledy Piggledy. The school that is actually an accredited teacher training centre as well, and they have put in these cameras as an example of sort of best practice. The headmaster has actually said this technology would only serve to, you know, drive up already high standards. But actually, there's some precedent here. The school's previously drawn criticism because they actually introduced some time ago a finger scan recognition system for pupils to buy their lunch.
Now that's just cool.
That's just wacky technology.
I think the C word
awesome.
You're looking for, Tim, is crazy. That's just crazy.
If it's a matter of, you know, simplifying the matter of the
how could
method
that possibly
of purchasing
simplify
it, if you've got an account that's attached to your biometrics that charges you maybe a fee, an account somewhere.
I think if we put aside the direct civil liberties issue. No. If we put that aside for a minute,
thereof.
Tim. No. But can I just say, you don't think it suggests a suspicion of the student body that is perhaps unreasonable? You don't think the school, it's not a good attitude for the school to be adopting? It seems to assume that the children are going to be misbehaving or they're miscreants or something. I mean, and a quote here from one of the mothers is quite demonstrates this problem quite well. And she said, there is a sphere-like camera at the front and two more cameras at the back. My son said he found it quite intimidating. My point here, Tim, is that children here, like, they're being put in positions where they're afraid to go to school. And I don't see why that's a necessary or useful thing to be doing.
Oh, I should grow up a little bit. And look, this is, you know,
Tim,
this is,
they're children. You realise they don't grow up until they're no longer children,
they
until
grow up
they're
slowly.
Adults. Look, it's a gradual growing process,
I mean,
Tim.
But
that's
what is the threat of the cameras? I think the threat
of the students?
But the point is that there are always going to be threats from students. And the cameras are ways of dealing with that. And even if there aren't any threats, why not just have the cameras there? And by the by, there is also a significant case to be made for the apparatus like this increasing the accountability of teachers. It's not like it's just the students who are being watched. This is an additional level of security that happens in a school.
And an additional level of intimidation for teachers.
Yeah, but it deals with the wealth of it. But maintaining accountability of teachers and students can only be seen as a good thing.
I don't think it's right to say it can only be seen as a good thing because three of your co-panelists clearly see it as a bad thing.
Well,
as do how many of them walked out? Anyone aware?
More just demonstrative evidence of the failure of democracy, I think.
150 people signed a petition, so
yeah,
enough of them were concerned.
When they eventually came back in their V for Vendetta masks,
can I just pick you up on your last comment, which I'm quite sure is serious. Would you suggest a move to an authoritarian style of government? More in lieu of the 1984 sort of system?
I think we've finished talking about this, don't you,
Yeah,
Casey?
I think we should hear what the listeners have to say.
Actually,
from the
yeah.
Facebook group Left, Right and Centre, or you can even give us a call on 8303-5000.
In breaking news, it's official. According to the Australian Bureau of Political Correctness, the numbers 3, 8 and 47 are now gay. In other news, a revolving door in an Adelaide bookshop has jammed, backing up pedestrians for miles. We now cross live to roving reporter Greg Arias for a report on the situation. Well, people are getting very, very angry here. I just talked to a man who wants to buy a copy of Moby Dick, and he is very angry indeed. I myself have been waiting for over 2 hours for a copy of Alice in Wonderland, and I'm starting to feel slightly miffed myself. The line hasn't moved for over 40 minutes, but chances are that anything up to 3 people may gain access to the store over the next half hour. So more on that story as it develops. Well, thank you, Greg. incredibly handsome-sounding man. Finally, to the owner of a red sedan, license plate NFM762, your car has been towed. And now this.
We're going to have a chat about Israel.
Yay.
This is one of those.
Tim, can I just say, I don't think it should sound as cheery as that.
I won't ever be so sing-song again, I promise. You know, it's one of those controversial issues that we have actually neglected to talk about thus far in the 14 weeks of Left, Right and Centre.
Mm. Well, the moment just hasn't been right.
Mm. But there's been a bit of a thing brewing over the last couple of weeks and we decided we'd talk about it.
Brouhaha, as it were.
A brouhaha brewing, in fact.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Thanks, one. Good one, Casey. Pretty much, it's been a bit of an increasing tension between the new Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, and the new American President, Barack Obama, because essentially there's been expansion of Israeli settlements in the occupied territory of the West Bank, which is a significant issue in terms of the peace process, because the issues involved here are, you know, in terms of the peace process, most people are looking for a two-state solution to the problem in Israel-Palestine. And the existence and expansion of Israeli settlements and territory that would become Palestinian under a two-state solution, or is Palestinian now, is just one more obstacle to this peace process. And it's been really interesting to see the way Obama has dealt with this, and it stands in stark contrast to the behaviour of former administrations. I was just wondering what you guys have to say about that.
Well, I don't have anything particularly... Well, I do, but I'd like to start also by saying... On the issue of the two-state solution, and that's the basically the model that most people propose, which is, you know, a separate Israeli and Palestinian state. And we've been looking at a couple of maps, and it fast becomes apparent that, of course, the West Bank and the Gaza Strip are separated by some considerable distance. So unless they're going to build a massive bridge,
they are in fact on other sides of the country.
It's almost like the situation with East and West Berlin following World War II, and. Mm. Like, I mean, there are all sorts of issues in terms of the fact that neither side is actually likely to give enough to create two-state, you know, to generate the two-state solution, but also physical geometry makes it...
I have a very intelligent, witty Parisian friend who always makes the point that if there were to be a two-state solution, that a Palestinian citizen would be the only citizen in the world who would require a passport or permission from another country to pass from one part of his country to another, his or her country to another. So, you know, that is a disconnected country. That's one of many significant issues with the two-state solution. And I think Chris over there has probably slightly more sympathy towards that sort of one-state solution than I would.
I don't think it's very practical because, Tim, earlier we were sort of having a bit of a chat over a coffee. Well, I don't drink coffee, neither does Tim, but I say over a coffee. And he was sort of suggesting, and I think validly, that the problem is that obviously because the Israeli population is much larger than Palestinian one, the Israeli sort of element of the country would obviously dominate, and there'd be problems, like, I mean, there'd be obvious problems in terms of actually reconciling that into one state. But I do feel that it's gone up to a point that I'm not sure either side is willing to give enough for the other side to actually create two states, and I don't see it happening.
See,
the other possibility, of course, is a one-state solution where each of the bits that did belong to Egypt and Jordan go back to Egypt and Jordan, because originally the West Bank was with Jordan and Gaza was with Egypt.
Yes.
Yep. And but of course that's not going to happen either, because Palestinians don't really want to be part of Jordan and Egypt either.
I'm not convinced that would work out very well for the Israelis.
Or for Egypt and Jordan, for that matter.
Yeah, a significant issue there is, of course, that Israel needs to have some level of guarantee that the borders of the West Bank and Gaza Strip are secure in terms of... The main concern they would have, I imagine, with giving back the West Bank and Gaza to Jordan and Egypt respectively, would be that they would then lose the power to, you know, control the flow over that border. I think we talk at great length about the two-state solution, and while I agree there are masses of obstacles, I think there is room for hope, and I think especially in settlements, I think, is an issue where, certainly if you look at the last 10 years, I think there has been an awful lot of progress. The West Bank has many, many Israeli settlements, and it's obviously an issue now because they're expanding them. But in 2005, as a part of, as a part of the roadmap to peace that was proposed by the US, the UN and others, evacuated forcibly and demolished all Israeli settlements in the Gaza Strip. And I mean, I think there's room for hope there.
The Israeli government has, especially considering the context of which all this has been done with, it's in a very precarious sort of geopolitical position as Israel. This is not without precedent. The government has done a lot. It has actually, in 1978, removed all its citizens as well from the Sinai Peninsula, demolished their homes, like Tim was saying, in 2005. But with the current new government in Israel, it's more hardline.
Yeah.
It's not going to be nearly so accommodating.
The other thing with that is the problem with it now is that Netanyahu is responding to popular opinion in Israel, and obviously the Israeli citizens in the West Bank, in the settlements, don't want to move, and it's very unpopular.
Mm.
And he's having a lot of trouble actually because it's not going to be a popular policy. And obviously, as a democratic government of sorts, It's, well, not of sorts. That's not...
Yeah. As a democratic government, the will of the people has to have some weight. I think there's an interesting quote here from the Transport Minister of Israel, Israeli Katz, who apparently quite close to the PM. He says, "I want to say in a crystal clear manner that the current Israeli government will not accept in any fashion that legal settlement activity in Judea and Samaria will be frozen." And Judea and Samaria are traditional biblical Jewish names for the southern and northern areas of... the West Bank, respectively. So
he's really trying to defuse the conflict. I tell you what's an interesting quote, because of course this new Israeli government has in some way coincided with sort of the new American administration, which is a quite sort of liberal one. It's got a reasonably liberal stance on Israel. And Barack Obama, very interesting quote from him, something that we were speaking about before, the previous administration would not ever have dreamed of making. He's actually said, "Settlements have to be stopped in order for us to move forward. That's a difficult issue. I recognise that, but it's an important one. It has to be addressed."
And certainly in contrast to that, stands in very significant contrast to the Bush administration that would never have done that. And I think another quite an interesting quote. I don't know whether I'm taking this out of context, but the Clinton actually came out and as a sort of a quote, she says, "He wants to stop settlements, not some settlements, not outposts, not natural growth exceptions." And she's talking about Barack Obama there. It's just very interesting that she speaks about what he wants rather than what the government wants. I just thought that was interesting.
So, time is getting away from us very quickly. But we were talking earlier about a solution. Chris was talking about a one-state solution. I wonder why haven't we considered a different kind of one-state solution, a one-world-state solution? Seems like state borders are the cause of a lot of this conflict. Why don't we just get rid of them all?
That's Casey's advice there, everybody.
I'd like to point out that's actually the main thrust of cosmopolitanism, which is an emerging theory in international relations, but I don't think Casey understood that when he made the point, so...
I'm no expert in international politics, but I think I'm correct.
Yeah, the trouble with it is, Casey, is that they've yet to find a way to apply it in practice, because all of these states with borders don't want to give up
We don't have a way to solve the current crisis so let's find a new one.
Why not try something completely different?
Essentially, the problem with your plan, Casey, is that nobody really wants it. I think that's its fatal flaw. Well, you're one of a very, very small minority.
Casey, I'm going to be polite this week.
Look, if...
That wasn't polite. Ding him again.
In an effort to reduce noise when their customers head home, pubs and clubs in southwest England are handing out lollipops. The promotion is the idea of the West Dorset District Council. The council gave the lollipops to pubs and clubs as part of an anti-noise campaign. Environmental Health Team Leader Graham Duggan said that we would rather that revellers leaving pubs and clubs suck on a lollipop than make unnecessary noise which can cause complaints. Rick Green, the landlord of the Sydney Arms pub in Dorchester, told CNN that if they've got something in their mouths, they wouldn't be quite so loud when they left the premises. Do you think it will catch on? Will it be a case of once you lollipop, you can't stop?
I think this is a great idea.
I think this is a poor choice of words. Anti-noise campaign as brought to you by Chupa Chups.
Hold on, your two statements didn't make sense. You said it was a poor choice of words and then said anti-noise campaign. I don't understand.
Was it a comment by the owner of the establishment who said that having something in their mouths, something to do with, like, better than nothing? Just, they could have phrased it a bit better. And then I made some crack about corporate sponsorship.
Mm. Left, right and centre, explaining jokes since 2009. In a bid to catch criminals targeting females on the seats of Bangladeshi capital Dhaka, police officers are donning wigs and wearing women's clothing. The Deputy Police Commissioner said that we took this unusual move because of rising crime in the city, and it's working. The teams are nicknamed burqa squads and are hoping to catch muggers, bag snatchers and pickpockets. Some male officers wear full burqas, but others opt for wigs to disguise themselves as women at busy intersections and crowded places where most of the crimes occur. Authorities said that the special patrol teams would continue to work on the streets in disguise until the law and order situation improved in the Muslim-majority country. Hang on, why don't they just use actual women?
Do they have no female police officers? That's like one of many things very wrong with this story. Like, what about entrapment issues is another thing.
Mm.
Look, I was going to say, maybe... I don't know what I was going to say.
I think this can only end well for two people in particular. One is Martin Lawrence of Big Mama's House, Big Mama's House 2, and Black Prince fame, and the other is Eddie Murphy. They can both turn this into big blockbusters.
It's just their normal activity.
Moreover, can I just quickly say, Casey, isn't Bangladesh a rather hot country? Like, wearing all those extra layers, I just think...
Well, it's hot now.
Very, very good, Casey, very good.
That was good.
Now, a follow-up on last week's story of Conservative English MP Anthony Steen, who's not recontesting the next election because he spent exorbitant amounts of money on his very, very big house. Sir John Butterfield, another Conservative MP, this time in the seat of Bournemouth West, Dorset, has had to explain how the taxpayer ended up paying for an extension to his house that, among other things, housed the gardener and the gardener's wife. Butterfield appeared confused as he explained that the Daily Telegraph had mistakenly claimed he had servants. "It's a gross misrepresentation of what I said to the young lady at the Telegraph," he told the BBC Newsnight programme. He denied having built servants' quarters from his parliamentary allowance.
"Now, the one mistake I made was that in claiming interest on the home, I didn't separate from that the value of the servants' or the staff wing, OK? And I claimed the whole of that and the whole of the council tax relating to that."
Butterfield's claims came to light after the Daily Telegraph noticed that he failed to pay capital gains tax on the sale of his house for £1.2 million in 2005. In total, he'll repay £60,000 in unpaid taxes. Guys, do any of you have servants?
I don't have any. No.
You have siblings, though. They can be proxy servants.
Well, my siblings are hardly paid. I think your parents serve that purpose, don't they, Matteo?
Yep.
You only children, you get it all so
and
easy.
They can't do anything about it. Can I just say, there is no ambiguity in this case. This is most certainly a poor choice of words. Definitely a slip of the tongue. The word is not servant. The word is helpers. Staff.
Staff, yes. He's got his own house for his servants.
Chris looks dumbfounded. According to the Times of India, British ice cream company Del Monte are releasing an ice lolly in the shape of Daniel Craig's body. The lolly will reportedly depict a scene from the Bond film Casino Royale, where Craig emerges from the ocean in his swimming trunks. Del Monte are reported to have created the purple License to Chill ice block after more than 1,000 women voted Craig to victory in a survey to find Britain's quote-unquote coolest celebrity. Artists are said to have quote-unquote worked tirelessly to sculpt the 41-year-old Bond actor faithfully, and spokesman Matt O'Connor claims that Craig is set to be officially immortalised and super smooth and licensed to chill in blueberry, pomegranate and cranberry flavours, each of which has less than 100 calories. So guys, do you think it'd be fair to say that lots of women want to eat Daniel Craig?
What?
What are you getting at, Tim?
Yeah, Tim, what's eating you?
This what?
Or who's eating you, perhaps?
Tim hasn't heard this story yet.
What? Sorry, hold on. I've almost something, or are they making an ice?
No, Tim, what's happening is lots of women are eating Daniel Craig.
No, Tim, yeah, it's gonna gulp like a fish. This is crap, because Daniel Craig
it's not crap, it's ice blocks.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, Daniel Craig is a crap bond, so he's going to make a crap ice block. I mean, it's going to be unrefined. It's probably going to be made from raw sugar. I mean, if you had someone like Pierce Brosnan...
Hold on, it's not raw sugar, there's going to be water too.
Okay, well, if it was modeled after Pierce Brosnan, it would be more refined, just more elegant, and just more
perhaps
pleasant.
Not as overtly sexual, and maybe some people want that.
I like Timothy Dalton.
It would be classier. You don't. No one does.
Former Orange County School Board trustee Steve Rocco has been sentenced to 2 years of probation in order to pay a $200 fine for stealing a bottle of ketchup from a Chapman University dining area. Stealing the 14-ounce bottle of ketchup has had further consequences for Rocco, as he's reportedly been ordered to stay 100 yards away from the college. In response, Rocco, who has been described as quote-unquote eccentric by the Times of India, and is allegedly known for espousing conspiracy theories, claims that school authorities planted the ketchup near his bicycle in an attempt to frame him. So, guys, I think the restraining order is particularly interesting. Do you think they have it in place because of concerns that he might make his way up to mustard or Worcestershire sauce?
I think definitely, and I think also the concern is he stole a 14-ounce bottle. It'll soon be like one of those great big drums of tomato sauce, and that is a serious... That theft of that would be a serious drain on the school's finances.
It can only
finances.
Escalate.
It's a gateway crime.
Yeah,
it is a gateway crime. It will be like a slippery slope, a tumbling...
Do you mean a
avalanche.
Slippery slope?
Do you mean a snowball, Chris?
A snowball. It will snowball. That's it. Okay. That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, well, what's interesting about this is that he claimed that he was framed and that he was only going to recycle it. But in that case, was the bottle in fact empty? And if so, why has he been punished so heavily?
Well, no. They might have, some bottles in SA can be recycled for 5 cents.
10 cents.
Well, it's gone up 10, that's right.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. I'm just saying maybe they have a similar scheme there and he was... stealing 10 cents worth of bottle from the school.
We get the idea. 17 British tourists visiting the Greek island of Crete stood trial dressed in nuns' habits last Monday. They were accused of flashing their bottoms in public, but had to be let off after no one showed up to the trial to testify that their behaviour was offensive, the Times of India reports. According to police, the men, aged between 18 and 65, were arrested at the popular Malia resort and charged with exposing themselves in public and offending religious symbols. According to a police spokesman, the tourists were dressed like nuns, carrying crosses but wearing thongs under their skirts and showing people their bottoms and the rest. So guys, is the fact that only women are allowed to be nuns a form of gender discrimination? And grow up.
Right. Jono, Wazza, Steve, I got the best idea for a stag do, mate. It involves grease, right? And booze, right? Lots and lots of booze, right? And nuns, right? We've got to work nuns into the equation somehow, right, lads? It's going to only end well, right?
What could possibly go wrong?
Can I just say, Mateo, that was not a very good British accent.
I don't know what accent it was. I'm not that good with accents. But, I just love all the shenanigans that the British get up to whenever they go to other islands. It just seems they can't control themselves.
The Dutch Justice Ministry has announced it will close 8 prisons and cut 1,200 jobs in its prison system after a decline in crime left many of the prisons empty. During the 1990s, the Netherlands faced problems of overcrowding in its jails, but there are now only 12,000 prisoners in a system with capacity 14,000. However, some reprieve may come in the form of Belgium, which currently faces a problem of overcrowded prisons. The two nations are currently working on a deal that could see Belgian prisoners housed in Dutch prisons, which could net the Dutch government 30 million euros and allow it to postpone the closure of its empty jails. Guys, it sounds like the Belgians are up to something again. What do we think they're scheming this time?
I actually think that these Belgian prisoners are all footballers, and they're really talented, but the Belgian team isn't up to scratch, and they're going to go into the prison, get out, and then play for the Netherlands, and hopefully win World Cup.
You know, I don't think becoming a member of somebody's prison, it implies some sort of citizenship.
No, but when they're let out, they will
They don't just open up the doors and let them run out the door.
And they don't become citizens, I don't think.
No, but also the Dutch would benefit by doing that, because the population would rise, the population of criminals would rise, and they wouldn't need to sack as many
people. But does a prison sentence count towards permanent residency?
Oh, that's actually a very good question.
Say you're in there for armed robbery or you know, a worse crime, and you're in there for a long time, enough to claim permanent residency. When you come out, you can become a Dutch citizen, and all that that entails.
I don't know if we know all the facts yet.
Oh, those Belgians are crazy.
Authorities in 6 German states have ordered retailers to stop selling Red Bull Cola energy drinks after traces of cocaine were found in it. The recall came after a sample analysis conducted in North Rhine-Westphalia found 0.4 micrograms of the banned substance per litre. Officials said the levels were too low to pose a health threat, but still not permitted in foodstuffs. Fritz Sergel, head of the Institute for Biomedical and Pharmaceutical Research in Bavaria, told Time magazine that there is no scientific basis for this ban on Red Bull Cola because the levels of cocaine found are so small. And it's not even cocaine itself. According to the tests we carried out, it's a non-active degradation product with no effect on the body. If you start examining lots of other drinks and food so carefully, you'll find a lot of surprising things. Guys, assuming a dose of cocaine was 160 milligrams, you'd need 400 litres, 1,600 cans, and $4,000 worth of Red Bull to feel anything. Surely by then you'd have bigger problems?
Yeah, but he just told us if we look close enough, we'll find plenty of other stuff. Does it all combine?
That's what totally freaks me out. I'm thinking, what are we going to find in there? Like nails? You know, some sort of duck feces?
Traces of nuts, Chris. I know what's interesting, that there was a story, the second part of the story.
No, hold on. Mateo, you don't have to look closely to see traces of nuts.
Have you finished speaking?
Yeah.
Go, because I have a bit of an anecdote to regale with the audience with. There was a story out of New Zealand how a woman actually lost 45 kilograms. She went from 105 to 60 kilograms, consuming nothing but Red Bull over a period of a number of months, because Red Bull is actually an appetite suppressant. And apparently she became fully fledged, you know, addicted to Red Bull. And when she was taken off it, she experienced withdrawal symptoms in the way of nausea and sweating, and she had a lot of trouble sleeping.
That's much less exciting than I expected. I thought you were going to say she became addicted, and because it's an appetite suppressant, she kept drinking until she actually physically, you know, was not... she didn't weigh enough to live, and then she sort of
like you,
died.
She became as thin as
I'm
you.
I'm not going to die of lack of food.
And she also had a heart attack.
That's nice. And our Facebook group is buzzing left, right and centre, and we've had a lovely little comment from an international viewer. I was going to say viewer, listener. Laura's written in saying, "The internet's a strange, magical place. Here Freya and I are sitting in a room in Japan, listening to the sweet strains of Australian accents through the tubes."
And can I just recommend, guys, that from now on we don't use Australian accents. Let's do something else. I'm going to be Dutch.
I've got my British accent sorted.
I don't have an accent.
Me either, do I.
I don't have a Dutch accent.
I'll do a Tim accent. I'm a bit grumpy and I'm hungry.
Oh, I am so hungry.
Tired.
You forgot the tired, sleepy bit.
And sleepy.
No, I'm so hungry.
Let's go to this.
How to tie laces. Part 1. How to tie laces. Part 1. A lesson in tying laces. Hold your left lace in your left hand and your right lace in your right hand. Rest one lace on the other in an X shape and put the lace on top under the other lace and back through the resultant hole. Pull tight. Pull two parts of one lace close together to form a loop. Pull the other lace, by which I mean the non-looped lace rather than the pre-looped lace, around the looped lace in a loop, and push the looped lace, by which I mean the second looped lace rather than the earlier looped lace, through the hole, making another loop. Pull tight. Now take one loop. Either is okay. Looping this loop to form another loop. Then loop the other lace and pull... No, sorry. Loop the left lace. Loop the left loop. Now, maybe that should be... the hell with it. Loop the left loop and then loop the right loop around the left one, putting it through the loop you've previously looped. Pull tight. You have now tied your laces. Next week, undoing double knots with a fork.
Stay tuned for that one. That should be very interesting. Let's move on to a story about the cyberspace. Tim, you might be out of your depth here, but I'll do my best to explain.
No, Tim understands Wikipedia.
Wikipedia.
The user-edited encyclopedia has banned the Supreme Court of Wikipedia. The banned members of the Church of Scientology from contributing to articles so that they can stamp out quote-unquote biased information. It went through a long-running internal review. There was the arbitration committee.
Which is called ARBCOM,
yeah, known ominously as the ARBCOM. They voted 10-0 in favour of banning contributions from IP addresses known to be run by the church, with one abstention. According to evidence found by Wikipedia, multiple users had been openly editing Scientology-related articles using Scientology equipment and apparently coordinating their activities. And administrators were concerned the edits were damaging Wikipedia's reputation for neutrality. It raises a few questions. Was it a good move? The motive was to preserve the neutrality, but by banning this group...
Hasn't that by himself damaged Wikipedia's reputation of neutrality?
The trouble with that is it's like they have a policy... I mean, for instance, I have an article, because I am the most prominent member of Left, Right and Centre, and maybe I meet the notability requirements. So I have my own article. I'm not really meant to write about my own article. And you could mount a similar argument that members or officials of the church aren't really in a position to write on it. And I take the point...
But they haven't just banned them from that article. They've banned them from all of Wikipedia.
Well, look, if you ask me, this is a... I do see confirmations in my worldview everywhere, but when even Wikipedia is going to say, well, there has to be some level of censorship on the way this thing works, they're absolutely right. And you can't... I don't think you can have both neutrality and this sort of idea of complete absence of censorship, especially when you're talking about a wiki. And, you know, they do have this sort of self-regulating processes like the ARBCOM, but...
And I'd also like to say, Tim, I think it's a bit hypocritical of the Church of Scientology to be arguing so strongly against this when they have a long history of, litigation to keep information secret
and censorship.
So I think it's fair that if another... I mean, whether or not Wikipedia are right to do this, I think the church complaining about it is maybe...
A little bit rich, a bit of an eye for an eye.
Whether or not they're hypocritical isn't beside the point, though. I mean, the point is that the editors of... it's sort of a motto of things like Wikipedia that they are we are opposed to censorship. There are plenty of cases where...
Generally, I think that's true, but there are, like... They do ban users who they feel don't present a neutral view or who are damaging pages, and I think this is just extending that to a larger scale.
In that case, I propose why not lock these very much disputed articles, but instead extend to these users the right to still edit other articles aren't nearly as contentious.
And the point I think it has been made that the problem with Wikipedia is, and anyone who frequents it will understand this, is that the difficulty becomes is less when it's talking about religious sites, but more when it's talking about biographies, especially biographies of living people. And that I think is where a bit of this can become an issue, because there is significant potential for libel, and in that respect, those people who look after Wikipedia do have to watch their own back there, because there are possibilities for lawsuits.
Yeah, and I can
give
you a sort of fun, not fun necessarily, but light-hearted example of this. I went to a thing at the Adelaide Festival of Ideas with, I think it was Julian Morrow from The Chaser, and he edited Chaz Lichardello's page to say...
You went with Julian Morrow?
Oh, yeah, we went together. We were a couple.
You're a thing.
A thing. We were an item. I broke it off.
But he's gotten a bit too big for his boots.
He got a bit too big for his boots, and I realised he wasn't a woman, which was a bit of a problem for me. But also, anyway, the point is, he edited, I think it was Chris Taylor's page to say,
Who's another member of The Chaser?
Who's another member of The Chaser? Chris Taylor is a murderer. He has a long history of abduction, blah, 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 blah. And they actually people they got onto it. We looked back half an hour later, and it was gone. Wikipedia had re-edited it. But the point is, the fact that there is the potential for things to be missed, and it does happen, demonstrates an inherent problem with
Wikipedia. Well, we talked about a case last week where it was missed. Mm. It wasn't picked up until the author himself actually informed the outlets what they had missed.
Mm. And I just question how effective such a ban would be anyway. Surely someone that wants to edit the assigned titles that wants to enter that page can just go to an internet cafe. And that, and what about the negative PR associated with it? You get the so-called Streisand effect, where, you know, this goes back to a story where Barbara Streisand sued some photographers who took an aerial photo of her home, and it just meant that photo then got reprinted in all of the newspapers, in all of the world media, so everyone saw her home, rather than if she hadn't sued, it just would have been ignored.
Yeah, but that is the problem with the internet, is that it's a thing that is incredibly difficult to censor and to maintain some level of, you know, sort of stop it from descending into chaotic, you know, you can say whatever the hell you like, and that's the problem with the internet. But I for one support Wikipedia for making at least some effort to substitute censorship for neutrality.
Well, can I just say, all this contention, all it proves is that the internet's a pretty valuable commodity, and as such, I think we should be quite judicious in our use of it. It's a scarce resource. It's not going to be around forever. It's almost filling up.
It is almost full.
And virtually at capacity.
Yeah, virtually at capacity. I think for those reasons, we should really be careful in our use of it. And that's, of course, what do we say? It's an ongoing campaign of left, right, and centre.
It's an ongoing action item for all the listeners.
Economic
to get
and social
to,
justice.
IPRS.wordpress.com.
Some of the things we advocate here on left, right, and centre. Mm.
So head to IPRS.wordpress.com for more information about that and send a letter to your local politician. Now, we're at the end of the show, but there's one thing we haven't yet talked about, and that's Chris. You mentioned last week that you met someone the previous weekend, and you said you're going to try and meet up with them, rendezvous with them week at the bus stop.
It was his rebound woman after Julian Morrow.
Yeah, so how did it go?
I decided I wanted to watch... Look, this is a bit embarrassing, guys. I decided I just wanted to watch the football instead.
You gave up true love for a football game.
Well, potential true love, and what's more real than men kicking a ball around a field for 90 minutes? Mm. Nothing's as real as that. You can almost grasp it. Well, I mean, to be fair, Casey, it was only potential true love.
But it's worth a shot, isn't it?
Chris, you were pretty cut last week.
Look, I don't think it is. I decided, you know, it wasn't worth it.
It was a good game, actually, as well.
It was a good game. I mean, you know.
I think we're all fully justified in our decision to be a bit dull and to stay home.
Mm. Well, I didn't stay home, but whatever. We've got to go. We've had a fun show.
Yeah, we've had lots of fun tonight, as we do every week, of course.
It's time for our introductions, though, and got to be short and sharp with this, don't we, Tim?
We do. I've been Timothy.
Laughing at Timothy's frustration has been Matteo.
Anthony here, good night.
Casey, good night again. Good night for the first time, but the fourth good night. Anyway, we're going to go out on a song.
That was agonising.
Yeah.